Have they changed it?
It has been postponed, May, due to a heavy cloud cover down at Cape Canaveral.
Oh, well, postponed. Well, I've... Heavens and earth. I've been looking to... nervous over it. Anyway, what a day it'll be in human history when they do have it. I don't get the morning paper, and I hadn't read it'd been postponed. Only, you know, just think of it. Only a little while, a century isn't long, is it? And it took 3 months to drive to California in a covered wagon. And there was no other way to go. Now, orbiting the Earth in 3 hours. Oh, well, anyway, I'll be glad when it does happen and I get my nervousness over this great epoch in history. I'm about as tense and anxious as if I were in the capsule. Imagine me being in that capsule. When you catch me in one of them, you'll have to run some. But I did say a prayer for the man Glenn last night, and I'm going to keep on saying them till he goes. And I hope with all my heart that nothing happens to him to hurt him. He's indeed brave. Well, I get all sorts of interesting letters. Now about my feeding the birds and about my feeling sorry for the freezing, starving wild animals. I had a nice letter from a lady saying, Ms. McCord, if you had to have your crops eaten up by animals and possums and rabbits and everything else, and also birds and hawks, you wouldn't be so anxious to feed them and feel sorry for them. Well, indeed, my good woman, you have an argument there. It is heartbreaking to have your hard labor all destroyed by pests. Still, I just cannot help feeling sorry for anything on this earth, bird, wild animal, insect, human being, or even a snake, I guess, that's cold and hungry. I don't think a snake, he gets in, you know, and holds himself up somewhere. I just can't help feeling sorry for them. I even feed the starlings, and I noticed everyone else is trying to trap and kill them, most people. They seem to be an awful nuisance, but I hate to throw out leftover food, bread, bits of meat, cereal, anything on earth that a poor, hungry creature, which God himself made, can eat. And I know, too, that it is a terribly tormenting thing to have them as pests. You know, I shall never get when I was in Philadelphia. The pigeons have literally ruined the city. And, of course, there's nothing to be done. Some way they've taken the ancient city of brotherly love completely over, at least they had then. The huge brick buildings look like drippings of white paint were running all down the sides. The square where the statue of William Penn is, everything looks like a hen house. And even the statue of Penn itself, they roost on it by the thousands. The city sprays and washes and cleans and goes to a terrific expense all the year round to keep it so you can even make out that it is a statue, but to no avail. It looks the same in 48 hours after spraying. And the buildings, of course, they can do nothing with them. And still, the greatest joy of the tourist is to stand in Independence Square and feed the pigeons by the hour and by the millions. They love it. Children go wild about feeding the pigeons. And they're almost as tame as kittens. But they can never be got rid of. You cannot shoot them inside the city. That's against the law. You couldn't do that. You cannot poison them because they drop dead. And people, in spite of all, they said, will carry them home and feed them to their pets and kill them. They don't know they're poisoned, some of them. And some of the very poor people have shot some pigeons that had lately been poisoned, not knowing it, and cooked and eaten them and died. That's happened. In other cities, too. So there is no way to get rid of the pigeons. I understand now they have a shocking wire put up all over big buildings in many cities where the pigeons roost. And they get on this wire and it shocks them and they drop dead or else they just leave and abandon the city. Then I read the other day that that doesn't work now either at all. I forget just what it said about it, that it doesn't work, but it's a failure. Well, on the other hand, I read a letter from a letter that I had last week from Mrs. Earl Starkey at Girard, Kansas. She says, you spoke about the birds needing feed this awful weather. Then she tells me of a batch of feed that she's fixed up and they enjoy feeding the birds so much, she said. This is her recipe. She says, I fixed up a batch this morning. It includes a combination suited for all birds and is simple, and most people have the ingredients. 1 cup of cornmeal, 1 cup of crumbled dog food, 1 cup of rolled oats, 1 cup of stale breadcrumbs, 1 cup of wheat, and 1 cup of ground rendered pork skins or bacon rinds. Ground up, you know. She said she didn't have the wheat, so she used whole oats. She ground the meat first, then she cleaned the grinder with the bread and the crumbled dog food. Said it works fine. I'll dare say the birds enjoyed that feast. You know, they just almost have to have meat or fat of some sort in the awful cold. Many people buy ground-up suet for them here in the stores. Thank you, Mrs. Starkey. I love to hear from my Kansas listeners. You'd be surprised how far into Kansas this program goes. Well, these funny tongue-twisting riddles get me down. How on earth was a person to guess at even the remotest meaning of those funny words? But I remember that everybody used to tell them when I was a kid. Miss Grace Cox of Pierce City sent me one. She says her mother talked to her and her sister many years ago. Her sister lives here in Springfield and is the wife of Mr. Raymond Thomas of Drury College. The riddle goes this way. As I looked through my handsome gansom garly, I saw Hinktum Pinktum in my comparley. If I had my lumber jumber jarley, I'd take Hinktum Pinktum out of my comparley. Pig Latin, isn't it? The answer is that a man looked through his window and saw a rabbit in his garden. If he had a gun, he'd take the rabbit out of his garden. Well, what is there in that riddle to make you guess that? And here's a riddle I've been intending to tell you that several have sent me. I think Perry Mason, our poet who lives at Billings now, I think he sent it to me. And my lifelong friend Iva Keeney Miller at Cape Fair, and some others, at this seem sent. I just can't remember right now. It's quite a riddle. Here it is. What is it that can go up the chimney down and down the chimney down, but can't go down the chimney up? Well, that's an umbrella. You know, I never could guess riddles. I'm the dumbest thing that ever happened when it comes to riddles. My, how I remember the old days of riddles and ghost stories when I was a youngster. And folk songs and playing button, button, who's got the button? And pretty bird in my cup. And drop the handkerchief. And pussy wants a corner. And black man. And hide and go seek. And auntie over where they threw a ball over the house. And how many miles to Miley Bright? What's the old witch doing tonight? Did you ever play that? That's the oldest one. I talked to a woman 104 years old. She said she played How Many Miles to Miley Bright? What's the old witch doing tonight? My, oh my. Those games now would insult the dignity of our sophisticated, complicated, overanalyzed, and unpredictable youngsters. And yet I can sit here and name you congressmen and senators and doctors and lawyers and preachers who are still living and have made a name in the world who played all those old games. And they ran like fury to Miley Bright so the old witch wouldn't get them tonight. I played them, and I truly believed the witch was after me. And I'm no senator or egghead. That word, egghead. How's that for an overworked word nowadays? An egghead, so I understand, is a chap with too much education and too little common sense. Egghead. And now, speaking of folk songs, now they're on the map. And believe me, the long-haired eggheads besiege me and haunt my sanctum sanctorum, coming from the universities. I've had them from Dallas, from Chicago Northwestern, clear from Los Angeles. They were in this country. They come to talk to me. I've had them going to write for the Reader's Digest and everything, all sorts of places, wanting to learn about the folk songs of our early ancestors. And now folk songs are so popular that everybody is writing them. And that's going to ruin them. And they're going to go into a dark oblivion as sure as shooting just on that account. And yet, these that they're writing now will be alive 100 years from today. So maybe it's all right. Here's the thing. They tell me that the communists are now trying to take over the folk festivals, especially in the East. And dear Sarah Gertrude Knott, who directs the big national festival, and has for 25 years, which now meets yearly in Washington in June. She has to watch all the corners, she tells me, for the first thing she knows, it's infested with all sorts of fellow travelers and an offbeat subversive sort, taking the festival over. She now has a Washington board which watches the matter closely. These singers, they'll get up and say, I'm going to sing a song of the workers. You know, they're always talking about the workers as though none of us worked. The men who go down and dig while the imperialists spend the money. That's the way they'll do. And then they'll sing some song they've made up. Our far-famed folk singer from Arkansas, Jimmy Driftwood. Boy, there's a real American. When Jimmy was sent for from our Ozarks to sing at the National Song Folk Festival in New York's Madison Square Garden last year, he got about enough of this workers' business. He got up and he said, I'm going to sing a song of the workers because I'm a worker, because I came from a country of workers, the Ozark Mountains of Missouri. We're all workers down there and pioneers who helped make this grand country what it is. Yes, sir, I am a worker. I have worked hard all my life. I'm a farm boy. I know nothing but work. I dug my living and education out by the sweat of an honest brow. I walked 15 miles to school to get my education so I could teach. I have never known anything but work, neither have my people. And now I'm going to sing you an American song. A song commemorating one of the greatest battles that went into the making of this great country. And he sang his Battle of New Orleans. It's gone over the country everywhere. Sold 1 million copies, you know. A folk song. And believe me, when he got through, he said there was a big applause all over the house. Well, we live in an upset and screwy sort of world, but it's a wonderful world after all. There's nothing wrong with it but the people in it. But don't let discouragement enter into your life in any way. Democracy is a slow old boat, but you can't sink her. We've weathered storms and dispossessions and wars and hot and cold, and we'll still be there. When one door closes, another opens wide. Now, I want to tell you that our dear Mr. Charles Iden of West Plains, who's been sick 3 weeks at St. John's Hospital, died last night at 6 o'clock. His well-spent and noble life came to a close. He was a brilliant man and a brilliant editor and a wonderful citizen. I guess you've heard it on the news and maybe read it in the papers this morning. Goodbye, and I'll be seeing you next Saturday, the Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.